Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and good morning, my friends, to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf. What this beautiful Saturday, the sun is just streaming through the window on October. I can't believe it's October already. October the 9th of 2010. And I thank you, as always, for joining us this morning. It is always a joy to have you here with us. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, and I thank our long-time listeners, as Off the Shelf's been on for over 6 years. For those who are tuning in for the first time, I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I cannot thank you enough for your continued support of Off the Shelf. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of my latest book, Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a powerfully moving and inspirational book that you need to add to your book collection. You can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, etc. And if you don't see it on the store shelf, just ask the clerk for it, and they can order a copy for you because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. So go give yourself a treat of Long Walk Up today. And now let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf guest. And our special guest today is a book author, an educator, and a short story writer. I'm really excited about her interview because she is not only continuing to learn, but some of the accomplishments that she's made in the literary field. She works with youth at Write On, a program that promotes and encourages literacy, self-expression, confidence, and creativity. She is a graduate student at Purdue University. She received her Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Southern California, and her works have been published in Writer's Digest, The Writer, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Cicada, and the Los Angeles Times, and that's not bad. She is the co-editor of Justine, and we are delighted to have her, the one and only Dallas Woodburn, with us here this morning on Off the Shelf. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Off the Shelf, Dallas.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful introduction. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and happy to have you and that you found time in your schedule to be on, being that you're a graduate student. That alone could eat up chunks of your time, and then the other works that you do to support literacy. I wanted to ask you, how did you get started working at Write On? And this is my first time learning about it, so this is a good thing. And maybe for some of our listeners, this might be their first time as well. And are you one of the founders of Write On? So how did you get started, and did you help to found the program?
Yes, I did. I'm actually the founder and the president of it, and it started because I love working with children, and I would go to classrooms. Teachers would invite me to come and read copies of my books to the students and talk to them about writing and my life as a writer and just the importance that writing and reading have played in my life. And I would find after talking with many of the kids that they didn't really realize that kids could be writers or that writing was something that kids could do, something that they could do to kind of have more control over their life, self-empowerment, confidence, mm-hmm. all of these things that writing brings us. A lot of them just associated writing with homework or they had trouble finding books that they really were excited about. And I just felt, you know, that was really a problem, and that I wanted to encourage kids to see writing as something that can not only be fun, but that could open, you know, so many doors for them, open their imagination, and help them dream. And so that was really kind of the beginning kernel of the idea that started Write On. So it began in 2001, so we're approaching
wow.
our anniversary,
oh my goodness.
Which is very exciting.
Congratulations. 9
oh,
years.
Thank you. Thank
wow.
you.
Oh, my goodness. And so I think that's a good point you bring out, that the students initially, because when are kids told to write when we're young, when you have a school project? And I as much as I love to write, even as a young person, I got to tell you, when I was in school, I was not absolutely, did not love to write school projects because I always worry that how much red ink was going to come back on the paper. So I didn't come. It wasn't like I completely enjoyed it. There was concern and some fear that I wanted to get good marks on my paper. So it wasn't something that I completely enjoyed. I think it's great that you have shown students that it's not all about, you know, getting those red marks on your paper, but self-expression and writing. I think it's like journal writing. It's very therapeutic. I highly recommend it, whether it's writing poetry or short stories or writing in a journal. I just think it's so, so beneficial. And that you pointed that out to those students, I think is marvelous. And to our listeners here at Off the Shelf, 3,000, and it could be more than that since and I got this off of the website, but 3,000 children have participated in Write On, and that is a lot over the last 9 years. I wanted to ask you, is the program, for people who might want to get involved with it, is the program set up like a typical school program, a summer camp? How is the program set up and organized?
That is a great question. And one of the things that I've kind of discovered in growing Write On is I found most success when the structure is fairly loose, and so I have different programs that I do, and I found that it's grown where I'll get an email from someone who is really excited about maybe a certain project that we do. So maybe they're really excited about the holiday book drive that we do every holiday season. And so they'll want to spearhead a chapter of the holiday book drive in their area. And so I'll send them, you know, the flyers that I use and some materials that I use when I do the holiday book drive in my hometown area. But it's really up to them as to how they would like to best conduct that event where they live. So there's a lot of flexibility. If listeners want to visit my website, it's www.writeonbooks.org, and that's okay. WriteonBooks.org. So I would encourage listeners, if you're interested in literacy projects and you think that this might be something that you're passionate about, to go on my website and look over the different programs that we do. I do an essay contest, holiday book drive, summer writing camp, and see if anything really strikes your fancy. And I would love to hear from you. Just send me an email, and we can, you know, talk more about how you can kind of start a chapter of Write On where you live. And it's been really neat to see it grow that way. We now have chapters in Pennsylvania, Texas, a couple in California, and then even one in Canada. So it's been, it's been really neat to kind of grow organically in that way.
Now, the summer camps and all the programs with Write On, are they all in person, or do you do some training through video over the Internet?
That's one thing that I'm working on right now with expanding. I currently do a summer camp every summer in California, and I've got a lot of interest from kids. I've been able to make connections. I email friends with kids all over the country, and so I'm hoping with technology that in the future, if not this next year, the year after, that I can do more video conferencing and video camps.
You should reach out to schools, too. I wonder if that would I would imagine, love to have the students become passionate about writing. It probably would definitely, they would see an improvement in not only the child's interest in the English and writing in school, but an improvement in the quality and depth of writing that students would, you know, bring out from inside themselves after working with a program like Write On. I wanted to ask you next, Dallas, can you tell our listeners some of the key benefits? I can think off the top of my head, but what are some of the key benefits that children and parents receive, that they tell you that they receive and that this program offers when they join or work with Write On? What are some of the benefits that people gain?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that there are lots of different benefits. Sometimes it's hard, I think, to put numbers on things like reading and writing and increased confidence. But one story that is really dear to my heart is a boy that I worked with who lives in New Orleans, and his home was devastated during Hurricane Katrina. And he was having some problems in school and just some disciplinary problems. He was very angry. And one of his teachers found my website and sent me an email. So I began corresponding with him via email, and I said, like we were talking about earlier about journaling, you know, I said, what if you just started keeping a journal, and it's just for you, nobody has to read it, you can write anything you want in it, it's just for you, and he said, he emailed me back, you know, can I write short stories in it, and I said, of course, you can write anything you want. And after a few months, he started emailing me some of the short stories that he was writing. And it's been a little over a year now since we started corresponding, and his disciplinary problems at school are completely gone.
Wow.
He's an editor on his school newspaper.
Oh.
And he expressed to me that he feels like he has more control over his life and over
mm-hmm.
things. That was something that journaling gave him, is just a feeling like, you know, here is a place that I can express all of my feelings. I can be my true self. And it just really helped him feel more empowered. And I think that's really a gift that writing brings. And I have so many examples of kids I've seen at my summer camps, for example, that really become close friends through their shared love of writing, and just kids from many different backgrounds, different ages, different situations that really realize that they all have so many similar experiences and they're not
yeah.
quite so different as they had thought. So I would really encourage, especially any parents or teachers that are listening, I just think that writing and reading are such great gifts that you can give to your children and your students, and it will really help them throughout their whole lives.
I agree. One of the key, I was reading a book on staying calm and relaxed. It's just a little small book, and one of the key points that the psychologist in the book noted was that self-confidence plays such a powerful role in a person's ability to stay calm. If you know that no matter what situation that comes up you face, that with the good Lord, you can meet any challenge that comes up. I don't care what it is. You don't get all spazzed out. You have that inner confidence that you have the ability to get it done. When you don't have that confidence, they say that people's anxiety just goes through the roof. So one of the things is to work on your confidence, and writing helps you do that. And when you, or if there's a situation you're afraid of, to gradually approach that situation little by little by little until you no longer, your confidence outmatches the fear, and then the anxiety goes away. So I think writing is a great tool to do that with, and it's a tool no matter what your health, your age, writing doesn't take a whole lot. It's not like running a marathon. You can still sit down and write. It's a wonderful, wonderful gift. I want to talk about your writing next, Dallas. How old were you when you started writing short stories? And if you don't mind, what was your first story that you wrote? What was it about?
That's right. I wonder if you have a similar experience to being a writer that I do. It's hard for me to remember a time before I was reading and writing. I just always remember it as part of my life. And I think part of that is because my dad is a writer, and so I kind of grew up with that as part of life. My parents would read me bedtime stories, and then I'd wake up in the morning, and my dad often wrote from home, and so I would see a writer at work, and I was always mm-hmm. really aware that the books that I was reading, that I was loving, there was someone out there who had written them. And I think a lot of kids, you know, when you read a book and you see a name on the cover, but you don't really realize that someone wrote that, and that could be your job. And I
mm-hmm.
just thought that would be the coolest job ever. So so I think, and my parents and my teachers were really encouraging of me. And one of the first stories I wrote was called The Magic Eye, and it was about a dolphin who had magic eyes and became friends with this dragon under the sea. It was a story about friendship. And I remember my first grade teacher had me read it out loud to the class, and that was just such, talk about a boost in confidence. I just felt so encouraged, and the opposite of what you mentioned earlier with having red marks all over your paper. I just think teachers are so important. When they encourage you, you feel like you can do anything. So I published my first collection of short stories when I was in fifth grade, and it was a really neat experience that I think about often. It's really an example of, if you have a big dream or just a big goal that you really want to accomplish, you can break it down into small steps, and I think sometimes just taking those first steps, and it can just turn out to be so much bigger than you ever imagined. So for me, my first book started when my elementary school offered a grant for $50 to do something creative. And I thought that would be so neat if I could put together a book of my stories and poems that I'd written and publish it, and then and sell copies to repay the grant that I had received. So that's what I did. My first printing was just 25 copies at a Kinko's coffee shop, and they sold out within a couple days, and I was over the moon, and I still had people asking if I had copies available. So I went back for my second printing, and it just really snowballed. Kids loved it, parents really loved it, and it's now sold over 2,500 copies all over the nation. So it's really an example that you just take those first few steps, and you really never know where it's going to lead you.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that story. Oh, my goodness, I'm listening to you and just going along with it, seeing you as a kid doing these things and how it has, and you haven't abandoned it, how it's continuing to sell and grow. I think that's really something. For our listeners, Dallas, there are people who might have been trying, and I also do advice for a site, a writing site, and I have people who email me things that I think now are simple, but to them it is very perplexing. So I always want to come from the point of who is the questioner. From there, it might be simple to a person who's been doing it for several years, but to somebody else it's just absolutely perplexing. There are people, who tune in to Off the Shelf every week, and people from around the globe who they want to get their writing career started, and they might even have listened to you share that story just now and thought, wow, and then they thought that they maybe never could have done that. But for writers who are seeking, they want to get that first story sold, but they think it's impossible. How can you just share with us how you landed your first paying writing assignment? I mean, you put your first short story book, a compilation of short stories together in the fifth grade, and you sold them, which I think is fabulous. But when you went out there to sell that first piece, how did you land that first assignment for our listeners who are trying to do that for the first time themselves, and they might be a little frustrated?
It can be so frustrating and daunting, and I think one of the, especially in writing, the name of the game really is persistence. And I mean, even now I get so many rejections when I send out stories or ideas to editors, and it's amazing how sometimes an idea can get rejected, and then finally it gets accepted somewhere. So I think a lot of it really is subjective, and it's just finding the right fit, the right editor who is looking for just that story that you can tell. But for me, what I really found that helped me is trying to turn things about myself that maybe some other people thought was a disadvantage, turn those into an advantage. Because I think oftentimes disadvantages are actually things that are unique about you and that offer you a unique perspective. So for me, I loved writing. I knew I wanted to be a writer. And in high school, I was reading Writer's Digest. I was reading The Writer. I was learning about my business. I was learning how to write a query letter the right way and how to be professional. And I think that also is really important, just learning the format for everything and making sure that you're presenting yourself as professionally as possible. But I still had a lot of people saying, you're too young. You're still in high school. You're too young to be a writer. But I thought, okay, I'm going to turn that around. So So I thought, what does being young, you know, that gives me a fresh perspective that other people don't have. So my first article that I sold was to a teen magazine, actually Justine. I'm a regular contributor to them still. And my first article was actually, it was about being sweet 16 and never being kissed. So I wrote a little first-person profile about that, and then I began writing more articles for them. So they were articles for high school students that was written from a high school student's perspective. So I wrote about going to prom. I wrote about getting over a breakup. I wrote about organizing my time with my really busy schedule at school. So things that I knew really well that maybe other writers wouldn't. So I would just encourage the listeners, anyone who really would love to sell stories to magazines or newspapers or websites, just to think about what makes your perspective really fresh and interesting. Because I think the neat thing about writing is that no one sees the world exactly the same way that you do. Yeah. And so everyone really does have so much to offer.
Yeah.
And then I think just the second really big thing is just being persistent. And my really first big article that I sold was to Family Circle magazine. And that was called What Your Teen Wants You to Know. And it was written for parents, but from a teenager's perspective as to what their teenagers were going through, you know, how high school has changed since parents were in high school, different perspectives on that. And so I remember sending that idea out to probably a dozen editors before it was accepted from Family Circle. So I often think if I had stopped after 11, you know, I never would have gotten that acceptance. So it's really, really important to be persistent.
Yeah, I think those points you – and I'm so appreciate the fact that you stress the importance of being persistent. Every writer I've ever read about or talked to, they say the same thing. You have to be persistent. You cannot quit. And that's just about in anything because, like you said, you get that 11th, 15th rejection, and you think, oh, I'm going to quit. And it's that 16th one that you're going to sell.
Exactly.
You
what if it was the next one?
Yes. And if you quit, then it doesn't happen. But if you don't quit, I've never seen anybody be persistent and nothing happen. I don't care what it is to do with things do happen. Family Circle, that's big. And I like how you said people told you were too young, and I heard that as well. But you said, what is it about me then? Maybe it's something that people say that's a negative that really isn't. So you flipped it around, and that tells me also that you are a positive thinker and you're somebody who looks for opportunity. You look for open doors, not closed doors. And I think a lot of great things are in front of you because of the way I can tell that you think. How much of an impact, Dallas, do you think earning a writing degree? I've heard some people say to get a writing degree, and I'm going back when I went to a writer's conference at the College of New Jersey, this is probably over 15 years ago, some people were saying to get a graduate writing degree, and other people were saying don't. It will stifle your writing, your creativity. But I want to ask you, how much of an impact do you think earning a writing degree, because I see more and more colleges offering them, how much of an impact did that have on your ability to land assignments with publications like Writer's Digest, Family Circle, The Writer, and The Los Angeles Times?
That is a really good question, and I think a lot of it depends on, first, what type of writer you are and how you work best, and also what type of program you're going into. So some writers I know are very solitary, and they work best when they have you know, a lot of just time to themselves in front of their computer, and they don't maybe necessarily need as much of a community of writers around them. They don't maybe they don't work as well with when they turn in drafts to critique groups. I mean, I've met some writers that to them that adds another layer of stress, where if they know they're going to have to turn something into a group of their peers to get feedback, that it makes it harder for them to write because they just get more stressed about the situation. I'm the type of writer where I really like feeling part of a type of community of writers. I love getting feedback as I work on each draft of a story to find out how I can make it even better. And I just really love, I also really love teaching. Teaching really fuels my creativity, and it really kind of fills up my idea well, where I just feel a lot more energized and kind of engaged in the whole writing process. So for me, a writing program is very ideal because it gives me time to write. But my program right now is 3 years, so that's 3 years where my main job is to write and then to teach classes for freshmen on writing, and then also just to be a part of this community of writers. So I've only been here, I just started in August, so it's only been a few months so far, but you should see how, all of the new ideas that I've been jotting down. I feel like my creativity has been energized, and there are just a lot of opportunities in writing programs. Also, being able to study with maybe some writers that you admire as professors, and being able to just hear about opportunities. I think writing can be so solitary that when you're able to meet other writers, whether it's an online or in person or at writers' conferences, as you mentioned, it's just so neat to one, meet other people that remind you that you're not alone in your love of writing. Sometimes it can feel, you know, crazy to be up until 2 a.m. writing your thoughts down on a computer screen, but you meet other people that love the same things that you do. And, you know, for example, I just had a friend last week share news about a contest that is coming up in October that I probably never would have found out about if I wasn't a part of this program.
Okay.
So, I really found it wonderful, but I do think that it's something that really is an individual decision based on what you how you work best and what you're looking for as a writer.
Okay. Because I've heard some people. I think it's helpful, definitely on your resume. I think it looks good to say you have a graduate degree from. Particularly if you're going into more nonfiction writing, I'm not sure with creative writing, but I think it's helpful to have that writing degree, as long as you keep your own voice and your own style, and you don't, that again where self-confidence comes into play, where you don't say my voice is less significant than the teacher's right, I'm wrong, and then you change your style to whatever the teacher seems to prefer. As long as you don't do that, I think then a creative writing program degree could be very beneficial to a writer's career. I absolutely love your blog at dallaswoodburn.blogspot.com. And for our listeners, that's spelled DallasWoodburn, just the way it sounds, dallaswoodburn.blogspot.com. Your blog is so alive. When I first went on there, I'm like, wow, this is so interactive. You have links to your Twitter site, commentary on books that you've read, quotes, resources and tips writers can use in their own careers. Where did you come up with the concept for your blog site? It's definitely a lot broader than most other blog sites I've been to.
Well, thank you so much for your kind words about that. My blog really is a labor of love, so I'm so happy to hear that that you enjoyed it. And I think it's kind of, I feel like talking about the different things to you today, I kind of feel like I have a common theme in a lot of my stories and experiences of things maybe starting smaller and then kind of growing organically. And I started my blog, I guess it's been about 3 years ago now, and I wasn't quite too sure of, I hadn't read too many blogs myself, I wasn't quite sure of what blogs even, you know, what the purpose was for them. But I went to a seminar at a writing conference about blogs, and I thought it would be kind of a fun way just to chronicle my own writing career, my writing experiences. I think my tagline is follow my journey as I build my writing career. And I kind of tried to build a blog that I would like to find, especially as I've been you know, building my career, there are so many lessons that I feel like you learn as you go into writing, that you just kind of learn as you go along. And so I thought I would love to have a space to be able to share those experiences, maybe to help other people. And so it's kind of grown then I thought, oh, I just read this great book. Well, maybe I'll write a review of it on my blog to share with other people. And then I started having authors find my blog and contact me and say, oh, could I write a guest post for your blog about this? Or I've maybe met a great writer at a writing conference and I've said, oh, could I interview you to feature you on my blog? So it's really grown where now I feel like the focus is pretty much very broad, any relating to writing, reading, following your dreams, like you mentioned, inspirational quotes. I think they're all kind of tied together, and so it's nice having a wide lens. Pretty much anything that tickles my fancy, I can find a way to work it into the blog.
Yeah, I highly recommend our listeners here at Off the Shelf, go check it out, dallaswoodburn.blogspot.com. It's up in the top 10% of blogs I've seen so far. It's way up there, and I think your personality just comes blasting through, and that's probably one of the good benefits of the blog itself. I know you list tips that students who are going to college or a university away from home can take advantage of, and I wanted to ask you, I think it was in an article that you wrote or either at your blog spot, I wanted to ask you, have you thought about taking your experiences as a student and a young writer, when I think about these tips you wrote, and turning them into a book? It could be either a novel or a nonfiction book, sharing experiences and tips and advice to students going to college, or a novel about a student who's having these various interesting experiences as they, you know, go to school and leave home for the first time. Have you ever thought about taking those experiences and turning them into a book, Dallas?
That's a great question. I wrote a story about going away to college for Chicken Soup, one of the Chicken Soup books. I think it's called Chicken Soup for People Going Away to College or something like that. And then I feel like my experience has kind of grown now that I'm in graduate school. It's my first time really leaving home, going far away, you know, going across the country somewhere. So I have been thinking a lot about that type of experience, and I feel like a lot of my short stories and my fiction comes out of my real life experience. I don't know if you have a similar writing process, but for me, I find that I'll start writing a short story and little bits and pieces of my own life will kind of work their way into my fiction. I have been thinking a lot about the idea of leaving home and missing home and, you know, growing up, going to a new place. So I definitely think that those themes will pop up in my story and maybe even a novel. That would be really exciting.
Yes, and congratulations as we just continue to – your responses are sort of kind of segueing into my next questions, but congratulations on landing a literary agent, Dallas. What was that process?
Thank you.
What was that process like?
That process was an extreme lesson in persistence. I think looking back on it, I think sometimes there's a reason that we get a lot of disappointments is because it makes, when you get the final success, it just makes it that much more meaningful to you and that much sweeter when you hear all of these no's and then you finally get a yes and you finally, to me, the process kind of reminded me a lot of dating and that you're looking for the right person who understands you, understands your work, like you mentioned, not trying to change your writing into something that it's not, really likes your writing, your story, the way that you write it, and they see something in you that they want. So for me, the novel that is going to get published and my agent accepted is a little bit different. It's in the young adult category, but it's a little bit different than some of the other young adult novels that I was seeing on the bookshelves. And to me, I thought that was an advantage, but I was getting a lot of rejections from agents who suggested these changes that I just really didn't, it didn't feel like it would still be my story if I made those changes. And so I almost felt like I was a puzzle piece, and I was just looking for the other puzzle piece that fit into mine. I was just looking for the person that really understood what I was trying to do. And I actually, it had been about a year and a half that I was getting rejections, and this was in May when my agent, when I finally got the phone call with a yes, and I had thought at the time, okay, if I go into this summer and I still keep getting rejections, I'm going to put this novel aside and start on a new project, because there comes a time when you just feel, you know, when it gets to be a year and a half, 2 years, you need to just start something new. You can't just keep spinning your wheels. But I got the phone call, the yes, the day before my birthday. So it was just a wonderful birthday present.
Yeah.
I hung up the phone, I remember, and I just burst into tears. I was so happy. And I kind of didn't really realize until I got the phone call, the yes phone call, how much I had started kind of believing that it was never going to come until it finally came. And I'm just so happy. I love, my agent is wonderful. Definitely the worth the wait to find the right person meant for.
So when you say young adult, what age group is the new book? And is there a working title, and is there anything you can tell us about one or two of the main characters without giving the story away on your new book?
Yeah, the working title is The Identity Theft of Dani Dickinson.
Okay.
It's about a 16-year-old girl. I'm thinking the age range is probably around high school that it's geared for. And I was really interested when I was writing it in kind of the boundary between real life and fiction, or truth and fiction. And as we were just talking about, how often when I write stories, a lot of my real life seeps into the stories, and I've read interviews with a lot of other authors that the same thing happens. And I think sometimes when you're writing something that is fictional, you're almost able as a writer to be a little bit more honest in it. Maybe you can delve into parts of yourself that you're not very proud of or you don't like very much, as opposed to if you're writing something that you're saying this is purely nonfiction, it can be a little bit more difficult to do that sometimes. So I was really interested in kind of the blurred area between fiction and nonfiction. So my main character, her name is Danielle, but she goes by Dani. And you can tell from the beginning of the novel that something is not quite right in her life. She's going to see a therapist, and the therapist asks her to keep a journal. And instead of writing nonfiction, you know, diary entries in her journal, Dani writes short stories. And as the novel progresses, you, the reader, kind of start to realize that there's more truth to these short stories than you maybe had originally thought. And that's really how you get to know her. As the novel progresses, and then there's kind of a surprise ending that you'll have to just wait and see when it comes out. It's been really, she's one of those characters, I'm sure you've had a similar experience, one of the coolest things when you're writing is when the characters really start to come alive to you.
Yes,
just can hear them speaking in your head, and they just won't let you go. And she was one of the first characters that really, really became a real person to me.
When can we at Off the Shelf expect to see your book on the bookshelves? When's it going to hit the market?
That's a good question. With my agent, at this point, I think we finished the last round of revisions, so it's currently being shopped to publishers. And so then I think once the publisher buys it, it'll still be a couple more years before it hits the bookshelves. One thing I was really surprised is, you know, I have experience self-publishing, and one great thing about self-publishing is that the turnaround time is so quick. And I've been surprised with the traditional publishing, how it just takes even more time than I had even anticipated. So it's been quite a learning process for me.
Yeah. Everything, every new change brings its from the old, it seems like you lose something, you let something go, rather than use the word lose, you let something go, and then you gain things as well. Nothing stays just the same. You don't just gain. There's some letting go with change as well. We are speaking with the one and only Dallas Woodburn here today on Off the Shelf, and we've gone to, we only have 20 more minutes left, and I have so many more questions to ask her. I'm pretty certain I won't get to all of them during today's show, but I want to just take a pause for those who are just tuning in to Off the Shelf, who've come in late this morning. Once the show streams, you can go back and listen to it in its entirety. And for those of you who want to go back and jot down little tips and notes that Dallas has given, this is one thing that the guests here at Off the Shelf are, they're just so gracious. They share valuable tips on ways you can land a literary agent or a publisher, or things to look for in a good, effective editor, just ways to grow your own career, and whether it's your self-confidence, working with children. These valuable tips are things you can use and apply in your lives, and it costs you absolutely nothing other than to tune in to Off the Shelf. And Dallas Woodburn, she's a woman on the move. She works with youth at Write On. It's a program that she founded, and it has several chapters now located throughout the United States and in Canada. And Write On is a program that promotes and encourages literacy, self-expression, confidence, and creativity. During today's interview, Dallas shared with us a story about when a teacher reached out to her and asked her to work with a young boy from New Orleans who had experienced the floods of Hurricane Katrina. And he's now an editor of the school newspaper, and the turnaround that he had when she worked with him and encouraged that he write in a journal. Dallas Woodburn is also a graduate student at Purdue University. She received her Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Southern California. She just started her graduate writing program in August. Her works have been published in Writer's Digest, The Writer, Cicada, and the Los Angeles Times, and Family Circle. So she's getting in some of the large national publications. She is the co-editor of Justine, and that's where she sold her first piece. And we are just so happy to have her here with us today, and encourage you really to go check out her website and her blog. Her blog is just really, her personality just comes shining through, and it's dallaswoodburn.blogspot.com. You're going to enjoy going over there. She has so much there at her blog. I want to just go back, and as we come down to the last 17 minutes, I have so many questions I want to ask you. The first one I want to ask you is, and I'm always curious about this with writers who either start off writing poetry or they start off writing short stories, and then they switch to a full-length novel. Was writing your full-length novel, and if you could give us the title of the book again so we keep it in our minds so when we see it on the market we'll remember to get a copy of it. Was writing a copy of your full-length book, was it easier, would you say, Dallas, or more challenging than you had expected to be compared to writing a short story?
That's a good question. The working title, to give it one more time, is The Identity Theft of Danny Dickinson. And, before I wrote this novel, I had quite a few novels that I had started and had kind of petered out and I hadn't finished. So I definitely would say that I was expecting the process of writing a novel to be difficult. And I think almost sometimes it's different than writing a short story, where when you're writing a short story, at least in my experience, I can kind of keep the whole story in my head. It's almost like a self-contained entity where when I start it, I can usually see at least the glimmer of the ending. And even, you know, when I look back on it, 10 pages, 15 pages, it's kind of a small enough thing to just keep in one section in your head, and it feels manageable. But when I was writing the novel, especially towards the beginning, if I let myself even think of how much longer this piece of work was going to be, it just became so daunting. I had to really just focus on each chapter at a time, and And so I think that was really different. I remember sometimes, like, when I was on maybe page 50, so it felt like I'd already written a good amount, but I just remember thinking, oh, my goodness, I still have, like, 200 pages left to go, and that just seemed so daunting. And I did kind of write out a pretty general outline, but once I got around page 100 or 150, something really special started to happen, where I think I'd mentioned it before that my character, my main character, really became alive. And it's written in first person, so it's written from her perspective. And something happened towards the end where I was expecting, on my outline, the story was going to go this certain way. And then it's hard to explain. When I talk to non-writers about it, they kind of look at me like I'm crazy. But my character kind of took the story in a whole in a different direction where I was writing it, and she said something, and it was like I was just writing her speaking. I was writing her words on the page, and looking back, I mean, this is definitely it was definitely the right way for the book to go. But I think a novel, at least for me, that was the first time that had really happened where. It moved in a different direction than I expected. So I think with a novel having more room to really explore in a story, really magical things can happen like that.
Wow. I think our lives go that way. And sometimes we don't, we struggle and fight so much. We start out the same way as a writer you start out. That has happened to me. I cannot tell you how many times. We start out with this, whether it's an outline or we just know the synopsis for the story, this is how we want it to go. And then something happens and the character's like, no, it has to go this way. And you can fight it. And we do the same things in our own lives. We have them planned out and then something happens and it says, nope. Those plans are gone. We're going to shift those plans, and we can either fight it and be very frustrated and miserable or just say, you know what, let me go with the flow and just see what comes of it and see what comes of it. What's the overarching message that you want readers to get from reading your work, Dallas? What do you want people to come away either thinking or feeling after they put down one of your short stories or after they put down your novel? And I love that name, The Identity Theft of Dannie Dickenson. What do you want people to walk away with?
Oh, you ask so many wonderful questions. I think it, there are lots of different I think the key, as you mentioned, is thinking or feeling. I definitely, with all my works, I want to touch people. I want them to feel something. I always love when I get emails from readers saying that they read something of mine that they it made them feel like they weren't alone. Like I mentioned something in one of my stories or one of my characters was going through a situation that maybe the reader had gone through or the reader had felt those things. And it was like, and I've had those experiences reading. They're some of my favorites when I feel like maybe there's some experience or emotion that's unique to me and I'm the only one that has to struggle with it. And then I read about a character.
Yes.
You know, undergoing that, and it feels like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm not alone. I do have that connection. So I think one of the main things I'm going with my writing is that idea, like that connection, that there's someone else out there who understands and not to feel alone. And I think that, at least for me, that's one of the main reasons that I read and also that I write, is those connections are so meaningful.
I want to talk briefly about working with an editor. I know you said you just were finishing up your last revisions. This is something that a lot of writers don't like to do. And I think you have to have a good editor, but I also think it's impossible as a writer to catch everything. I really do. Although reading your work out loud, if you read your work out loud, you will catch stuff that you would never catch from reading it on a paper after you say it out loud. Things will just jump out at you. So working with an editor can be, and so many writers have said it can be one of the least favorite things that a writer does. How did you come, Dallas, to appreciate the work of a good editor rather than see, you know, their work as them being intrusive and judgmental on your craft? How did you get to that point?
I actually think my perspective has been broadened a lot the past year in that regard. I actually finished my first project as an editor myself. I edited a collection, the first book that I'm producing through Write On. It's a collection of work by young writers, and so that was the first time that I was kind of in an editor's role, and that was really interesting to be on the other side of the relationship, because I had to work with some writers that maybe weren't as receptive to suggestions or ideas that I had. And
writers don't like that, man. I'm telling
they, you. They don't, and I thought, no, I was just offering some, you know, I learned that editors do, I think sometimes as writers we think, almost like editors are just trying to make our lives more difficult or just making these suggestions in order to frustrate us. But being on the editor side, I realized, editors do put in a lot of time reading through these and coming up with suggestions that, you know, maybe I should take a few minutes to really consider what they have to say. And I think sometimes as a writer, especially since when you write something that's so close to you and so important to you, it can be easy for, like, the first reaction to kind of be defensiveness. And then I think once you have that defensiveness shield up, it's a lot harder to even be receptive to those suggestions. So what I do is I kind of, when I get feedback from my editor, I usually will read it over, and then I'll just go for a walk or do something to get away from that computer and just kind of to let those comments sink in and just think about it a little bit. And I really think it's good to just listen to your gut. And if there are changes that are being suggested that just really you don't feel right about, it just feels like those don't feel good to you, then those are the things that you really want to stick to your guns with and not change. But other things, I think sometimes, like you said, getting a fresh pair of eyes to catch things is really important.
Yeah, and in the long run, as a writer, when your work hits the market, I say this, and I learned this firsthand. I don't like anymore somebody telling me you did this wrong. It can come across that way. You did this wrong. You didn't cross this T. You didn't dot that I. And you can become defensive. And I see writers when they become defensive and they defend, well, this is the reason I wrote this, and this is the reason. Okay, you can spend all your time defending everything that you write, or you can start to try to improve as a writer. You should want to just continue to strengthen your writing over the years, where somebody read your first book and then they read a book you wrote 10 years from now, they could see the difference. But one or two things I say to writers who don't like editorial comments, it's almost like having a parent stand over your shoulder and say you didn't clean your room right, and you can become defensive about it because you feel like you're being attacked personally. But I tell you this, either the editor is going to tell you where you could work to strengthen your book, or the reader is going to tell you. But as a writer putting your book in the public, you're not going to avoid being told one way or the other. You can let your editor tell you, or you can let the readers tell you. But you're going to hear it one way or the other. Somebody's going to come back to you with some comment. If they don't come to you directly, maybe they post it on a book site and the whole world reads it. You're going to get feedback one way or the other. There's no way around it as a writer. So pump up your self-confidence. Nobody's attacking you, and just continue to try to strengthen your work. I know, Dallas, you are very good with social media, and I'm going back to your blog site. It's just so good. My first impression of it, dallaswoodburn.blogspot.com. If somebody's new to social media, because we're hearing today from businesses to writers on and on, get on Twitter, get on Facebook, LinkedIn, MySpace. How can writers start using these platforms? And we only have 7 minutes left, and I have other questions I want to ask you. But how can writers start using these platforms to grow their book, poetry, or short story reader base? To go beyond just posting on them and to begin to broaden their reader base, how can they use these social medias to achieve that?
I think that is such a timely question that, these social media has become so prevalent and everyone's wondering, you know, should I join this Twitter thing? How can this help my writing? And I think a main thing I've learned is that social media is great to connect with new people, to meet other writers, to learn about websites and, you know, contests and opportunities that you might not have learned about before. But there are a couple big things to keep in mind, and one of them is to make sure that social media doesn't become a a procrastination tool for you to make sure that you're still doing your writing. And also, I found that I've tended to reach the most people when I go into my social media with an idea of how can I help other people, how can I serve other people with useful information, as opposed to how can I promote myself. And so I really try to post links to other, you know, articles that I found that I think are helpful for writers, you know, websites that writers might find useful. And then you know, if I have a short story published online, I'll post the link to that also. But I think sometimes with Twitter or Facebook, you get people that are just focused on themselves, and I think other people notice that, and it makes them less receptive to what you have to say. So if you go in with the mindset of, I want to really share information and help people, I think it'll end up promoting your own work better as well. So that's a helpful mindset to stay in.
And a very good tip, a very good tip. Before we close, we've got 4 minutes left. I just want to let our listeners here at Off the Shelf know a little bit more about Dallas Woodburn, our special guest here today. She was a nominee for the 2010 Pushcart Prize, a finalist in the Southern California Review Fiction Prize, the first place winner in the Let's Writer Literary Contest, and a semifinalist in the Amazon Breakthrough Novel Award. So just huge, huge congratulations. So many things that Dallas Woodburn does. And, of course, her work with Write On, her new novel. She's landed a literary agent. Her new novel, The Identity Theft of Danny Dickinson, is the working title that's being shopped to publishers. I hope one picks it up soon so we can go out and get, again, The Identity Theft of Danny Dickinson. We can go out and read it and enjoy it and remember Dallas in our interview here on Off the Shelf. As we do come down to the last 3 minutes, Dallas, who are some of your favorite writers and what is it about their work that you appreciate most?
I really love writers that just kind of spark something inside me that help me see the world, I think, in a new way. One of my favorites is Amy Bender. She recently came out with her new novel, is called The Particular Sadness of Lemon Cake. And I actually had her as a teacher, and she's a great teacher, and her writing is just very fresh, and she just has some great characters and really interesting things happening in her fiction. Also some of my favorite just classics. I love To Kill a Mockingbird, The Great Gatsby, Catcher in the Rye, are three of just my all-time favorites for just the voices, the characters. I'm a real big character person. If the character grabs me, then I will follow wherever they want to take me in the book.
Wow, wow. I wanted to ask you, can you give us your website address again so our listeners can go over and check it out? Again, her blog site, which I cannot pump up enough, is dallaswoodburn.blogspot.com. But can you give us your website URL again, please, Danny?
Yes.
I mean, Danny.
It is.
By your name.
It's www.writeonbooks.org, and that's WriteOnBooks.org. And I'd love for you to visit. I'd love to hear from you. My email is on the website, so if anyone would like to email me with questions or anything, I always love to hear from readers and listeners.
What's the title of the last book that you read?
Mm-hmm.
What's the title of the last book you read?
I read a book called Amy and Isabel. It's by Elizabeth Strout, and she actually recently won the Pulitzer Prize for her book Olive Kitteridge. And Amy and Isabel was her first novel. So I thought, since I'm kind of a beginning novelist, I would read her first novel and see what I could learn from that.
Oh, thank you so much. We are just about out of time. Dallas, in just maybe 30 seconds, what last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave with our listeners here at Off the Shelf?
I'll give one of my favorite writing quotes. It's from Ray Bradbury, and I asked him his advice to writers, and he said, write with passion and write with love, and I think that's a great way to live your life as well.
Oh, Thank you so much. Oh, Dallas, what a treasure. You are truly like a pearl. You are like a rare pearl. I have so enjoyed having you here on Off the Shelf, as I'm sure our listeners have as well. Look out for Dallas Woodburn's book, The Identity Theft of Danny Dickinson. Come on, book publishers. You got to get this book so we can go out and grab a copy and read it and visit her online at dallaswoodburn.blogspot.com and at her website. Give your website one more time, Dallas.
www.writeonbooks.org.
And she is a graduate student in a creative writing program. She's won literary awards. She's a teacher. She works with the Write On program, which she founded. Go over and check that out and support Dallas Woodburn. You are really going to be in for a treat as you get to know her more and more and more. For our listeners here, thank you for tuning in. Be back. We're actually going to be on this Friday, the 15th, at 9 p.m. with a writer. She's also a psychologist and a novelist, and she writes stories about mother-daughter relationships. So tune in 9 o'clock this Friday, October the 15th. And then after that, we'll be back on our regular Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we look forward to seeing you. Thank you. Thank you for your continued support. Tremendous thank you to Dallas Woodburn. Loved, loved, loved sharing this time with you. To our listeners, remember that you're so valued and so truly blessed and so loved. Goodbye for now. Dallas, I'll shoot you an email.
Thank you.